Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. Just myself and my guest today. Jim is in San Francisco, if I believe. He was called down to receive some awards, I believe, from the Republican Party, and so he's been out of pocket, as they say, for since I believe it was last Tuesday. Jim will certainly be back with us next week, though. You know, it's funny, when a guy like McKinney is not around, you really realize the value that he has to a show like this one. Like to get some of you bloggers, by the way. I know you're pretty opinionated. Like to get your opinion on that. Kind of pinch hitting right now for Jim is my friend Jeff Deist. Jeff is very much a conservative. He is now the general concept for a concept. What's the general concept? I don't understand that at all. I think I'm really going crazy. General counsel for a private company called Monetary Metals. Wonderful to have you back, Jeff. Thank you so much for taking some time.
Yeah, Al, it's good to hear your voice. It's been a while since I have been on the show.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. For any of you new listeners, Jeff and I have been friends for an awful long time. We have known each other since, if I'm not mistaken, 2004, when I had the fortunate experience of spending some time in Washington, D.C., with Jeff, who was the chief of staff, for lack of better terms, for Ron Paul. So I had the opportunity to spend quite a bit of time with Ron. Great, great guy. I really admire him. And what can I say? I think I cut my teeth on his politics. He is really, really good. Jeff, let's talk a little bit about what your role is with Monetary Metals.
Well, so we do gold and silver and platinum leases and bonds around the world. So we have relationships with refineries, with industrial users, with jewelry manufacturers, anybody who needs a supply of physical metals. And so what we do is we go out in the market and try to obtain physical metals from clients. They open accounts with us.
Yeah.
And then we try to use those physical metals to finance actual productive businesses. So the idea is to, in effect, bring back a gold monetary standard, not in the broad sense or in the governmental sense, but in a narrow sense, and let people use gold and silver as money to finance projects, and let them get paid interest in physical metals. So, you know, there's a couple hundred thousand tons of gold, for example, out there all around the world in central banks and otherwise just sitting around. And it's not official money anymore because governments have created legal tender laws and fiat currencies, but it still has monetary uses and monetary value. So we're trying to pull some of that value out of all this physical metal that otherwise, Al, is just sitting in vaults or in storage, and people are paying insurance and storage fees when they could be earning on that gold or silver.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. You know, Doug Casey, a guy who I used to pal around with quite a bit, have not seen him, unfortunately, for probably 10 or 15 years when I left the speaker circuit at the various financial conferences around the world, just sent me an article. Actually, I was sent an article by Doug talking about real money, true money. And it's a very, very interesting article. He relates it very effectively to what's going on in the United States right now. The United States right now, really, we have money. Sure, we have currency, but what's it backed by? It's backed by absolutely nothing. All the governments around the world know that, and all of the big players in the financial community know that. And I think that is one of the reasons that we are perhaps a little bit less respected in the world than we were maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, even though we were not on a gold standard 10 or 15 years ago. Richard Nixon took care of that. But if you want a really, really interesting treatise on gold and the true value of money, on the blog or any place, any way you want to contact me, and I'll be more than happy to send you reprints of this article by Doug Casey. Very, very good. Jeff, do you mind if we switch topics and talk a little bit and get away from precious metals and talk a little bit about the United States and you know, kind of stress, I suppose, why we really need to be on a gold standard?
Well, look, the dollar's out of control. The whole world knows it. It's a little more under control than other currencies, like the euro or the yuan, for example. But ultimately, the world knows that the U.S. government is never going to get its house in order, its spending versus what it brings in taxes.
Right.
And so we're going to abuse our status as the world's reserve currency. The question is how long the world will let us get away with that. They've let us get away with that since at least the 70s.
Yeah.
So, you know, the short answer could be it might be quite a long time. But nonetheless, at some point, just issuing more money and then piggybacking more credit on and more debt on top of that doesn't create any new goods or services, doesn't make us wealthier, doesn't make our economy more productive. So I think the world is starting to take notice of this, and that's why I think we see central banks talking about digital currencies. I think that's why we see the IMF talking about potentially stepping in case of a crisis. So it's definitely a frightening time, and it feels at least like 2008 to me.
Well, 2008 was not a good year for the U.S. of A. And I got to tell you, going to be talking about this later on in the week on other segments of the show. I really wonder if America is going to somehow get out of the problem that it's in right now. I am truly concerned that it will not, but I guess we'll see later. Jeff, let me ask you this question again in a political sense. Give me some thoughts. We're down to about 2 minutes here until we break for another segment. Give me some thoughts on your feelings right now about the environment that America is operating in, would you?
Well, there's a big difference. We mentioned 2008. In 2008, a lot of people got hurt in housing. A lot of people got hurt in stocks and bonds. But nonetheless, you could at least go into cash.
Right.
And if you were smart and lucky or some combination, you went into cash before the crash. But even if you got hurt in the crash, you could go into cash. And inflation was, although higher than they admitted, it was pretty low. And banks were holding their own. Today, in 2023, you can't just go into cash because real inflation is at least 8%, if not 10%, in price inflation, I should say, and banks are shaky. I mean, your local bank may have a bunch of treasury debt that's upside down because it's issued at older rates, you know, well below 2%, whereas new treasuries are paying for, you know, almost 4.75 or 5. So, you know, your local bank could be insolvent. So unlike 2008, you can't just flee into cash and sort of wait for the storm to pass. You know, we're in a different environment, an inflationary environment. I think that's going to last for the next decade, and I think that's going to really profoundly change life for Americans. I think, you know, anybody under about 40, maybe even 50 years of age is never going to have seen anything like it.
I want to talk a little bit about that, Jeff, in the next segment, but right now, unfortunately, we've got a quick attack. How do you quick a tank? I don't know. But anyway, that, as it shows, I'm getting old making comments like that. We're going to take a really quick break for a commercial, and then I'll be right back with Jeff Dice, General Counsel of Monetary Metals, and we'll continue this discussion. Stick around.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back. Continuing my discussion with Jeff Dice Jeff, I have a question for you. We got 2024 coming up in just a little more than 500 days. How much do you think, where do you think the economy is going to go by that time? And how much of an input do you think that'll have in the election?
Wow. Well, it's clear they're not going to be able to get inflation under control. No. I would argue over the coming decade, much less over the coming 18 months or whatever until that election. So,
right.
I mean, clearly Joe Biden is not going to run on the economy. He didn't run on the economy last time, in the midterms, and
yeah.
It didn't hurt him. So, I mean, this idea that the economy, it's the economy, stupid, which James Carville famously said back in 92 when he was working for the Clinton campaign. I'm not sure that's the case anymore. I think now things have gotten so tribal that people just, you know, vote based on just pure tribal party loyalty. I wouldn't want to be president in the economy that's probably coming up. I don't, other than ego, I'm not so sure I understand why Donald Trump wants to return to the Oval Office. I sure as hell don't know why Joe Biden, given his condition, wants to continue being president. But the idea that we're going to have Biden versus Trump again, which appears to be the most likely scenario, I mean, a lot could change. I mean, that's depressing, I think, for the American people. But more importantly, you know, we need candidates who are actually going to take a sober look at the economy, at the Fed in particular, and have some ideas and something to offer, as opposed to just more of the same, kick the can down the road, more debt. That's what's so frustrating, is that we have very serious economic and financial problems, but we have a very unserious political system that won't allow adult conversations about it.
Why do you say that, Jeff?
Well, because what the candidates will run on won't be the serious structural issues of the dollar, debt, entitlement, spending, right? The big issues will be abortion or woke or transgenderism or school choice or Donald Trump's marital affairs or whatever it might be. And unfortunately, that's just what drives media. And so we have a media-driven political circus that doesn't want to talk about these underlying, what I would call, structural issues.
Yeah. I don't know, I gotta tell you, you bring up an interesting point, and I don't necessarily want to take off on it, 100%, but I cannot believe, I've been a political observer now on a serious note, for probably over 30 years, and I cannot believe what's happened to this country, and I won't go back that far, but I'll say almost that far, during the Clinton era. I think we were kind of okay with Bush Jr., but I think that under Obama, we really started to fall off the precipice. What do you think?
Well, in the sense of debt and becoming unpayable and entitlements becoming unpayable in any sort of meaningful way, I mean, at some point between, let's say, Reagan entering office in 1981, the U.S. national debt was about $1 trillion.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to today, 2023, 40 plus years later, it's over $30 trillion. At some point between those two points in time, and that same period, that same 40-year period from about the early 80s to about 2022 also marked, increasingly downward pressure on interest rates by the Fed. I don't think that's a coincidence. It made the cost of borrowing by the federal government a lot cheaper. At some point we just got beyond the curve where we know that the U.S. government will never be able to meaningfully pay entitlements or meaningfully pay back all this debt. So that's where we are as a country.
Yeah, and that's kind of unfortunate. We were at one time the strongest country in the world. Let's take people really had listen to what some of our presidents had to say, which I don't think they do anymore, but take the situation, for example, in Ukraine. I would guess that probably under Reagan, I don't know about Bush Jr. and I don't know about Obama, but certainly under Reagan, I think Reagan could have put a stop to that if that was his intention. That's not the case anymore.
Yes, I think mathematically we still could have grappled with this probably into even the George W. Bush years, where debt got up to $4-5 trillion. But now at 30, and you start doing the math, you know, divide that between American taxpayers, and you just start looking at the entitlement promises we've made to the fastest growing segment of the population, which is people over 65.
Yeah.
And, you know, the numbers just don't add up anymore. So the question becomes, at what point will we deal with that, grapple with that politically, as opposed to just pretend like it's not happening and get elected for four more years and push it off on someone in the future?
Well, I think the future really is pretty disconcerting to me right now, in the sense that I don't think we have an Oval Office, or for the most part, a federal government that really can take the United States to where it needs to go. I'm certainly not a Democrat, you know, but I think the Democrats in Congress, I think, are a lot more, that's the word I'm looking for, a lot more competent than some of the Republicans. And, you know, with what's coming up in the next election, I think if you have the same Oval Office, and if for some reason the Senate goes to the left, I think we'll be absolutely screwed. Any comment on that?
No, I think we're going to have to start figuring things out at the state and local level, because I think at the federal level, the problems are just baked in and they're politically untouchable. Things like Social Security and Medicare, you know, cutting defense spending, changing foreign policies, significantly taking steps to shore up the dollar and pressure the Fed. You know, these just are political non-starters at the federal level. But at the state and local level, I think there's a lot that we can be doing and thinking about to hopefully create some areas of relative prosperity and freedom.
Yeah. Jeff, got about a minute left here, maybe a minute and a half. Give me a prediction on the 24 election for the Oval Office occupants.
Well, at this point, if I had to bet today, I would bet that Joe Biden will be reelected.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure that Ron DeSantis plays nearly as well outside of Florida from a likability factor. And I don't think Donald Trump does better a second time against Joe Biden, despite Biden's what I would consider a horrific record of sheer incompetence in office. I mean, it's a different political landscape now.
Right.
And it's, you know, if you just look at demographics and you just look at the numbers, unless Republicans did something where maybe they win Virginia, you know, with Glenn Youngkin or something like that, they've got to hold on to Texas and Florida, and that's going to be hard enough, much less all those Midwestern states like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin that flipped for Joe Biden. So the math is very, very tough for any Republican.
Very tough. Jeff, unfortunately, we got to take a break here for the top of the hour news. You guys stick around. We're going to be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Second half of KER Politics. Chatting with my friend Dan Pisani down in San Francisco. Dan is very politically astute, as you know, who have heard him on the program before. He is a voracious op-ed writer, and he's very, very opinionated, but also very well informed. Dan, what I'm curious about is, you know, I think it's pretty evident that Joe Biden is going to run for president. I don't think there's any question whatsoever about that. And I'm also firmly convinced that we're going to have a replay of the last election, which was Biden versus Trump. I think we're going to have the same thing here. Most of my colleagues and most of our guests think that Biden would beat Trump in this next election. What do you think?
I don't think so. I think Trump could easily beat Biden. I don't know if it'd be easily. In our country, you still, you just have to question this. After going through the midterms and seeing how many people still stick to this line that the left is pushing, I'm stunned by that. I'm embarrassed by the voting in the United States. I'm just absolutely embarrassed. Even with the corrupt system we have and everything else, that so many people will vote for this. I mean, how do you explain Carrie Lake losing or Fetterman winning? How do you explain that? It's stunning to me, these candidates. And we get what we vote for. Yeah. So we've gotten Biden. We have to accept this. But at some point, you got to say, this guy, he's a husk of a human. Yeah. He doesn't really know what he's doing often. He's lucid sometimes, but he's way left.
Yeah.
He's pushing a whole lefty agenda on the whole country that much of the country doesn't like.
Yeah.
And you had a competent human in Trump who got things done. I mean, he was, you may not like his style. I'm not a big fan of his style a lot of the times, but he gets things done and very effective for the country. We had a strong economy. He got rid of a lot of regulation that was just getting in the way.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time, we are our own worst enemy in
this
country.
Yeah, we are.
And now a lot of people are not taking us seriously, and it's getting to be, the left likes to talk about their little existential threats with the climate and everything else. This is getting to be an actual existential threat when you have countries that think that we're a pushover and are attempting to push us over. And I don't know. I hope people at some point will start to look at this rationally and say, hey, you know, Trump is a better candidate than Biden. And they have another opportunity, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Do you think that's a possibility?
I do. I think it's a real possibility. You know, they had him on, the left had him on one of their networks the other night, and he held up real well, and he handled the person who was attacking him the whole time, and then all the lefties were in a bunch about it. But they realize that he speaks in common sense, and people like common sense, and he's not afraid. I got to tell you, Trump's a different kind of a human, no question about it, and I can see where some people, you know, probably a lot of women would find him offensive.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, it takes that personality to get things done. The country's got to come to grips with the fact that it has a lot of corruption in it. We have a very corrupt group of people that are intruding into people's lives and watching them. That's dangerous. You have a corrupt judiciary. You have an extremely corrupt media. And somebody's got to go in there and clean house. And I'd like Trump to go in when he's just got 4 years and ask for a bunch of people's resignations in the FBI, in a variety of different places, and say, hey, we're going to do things differently and we're going to start over. Because this is now affecting everyone. And someone's got to come in there and do that. And you can't have the polite little Republican who kind of works around the edges.
Yeah.
You got to have someone who can make wholesale cuts.
Yeah.
And he's the guy to do it.
Yeah. I don't disagree, Dan. I mean, something very definitely has to be done. And, I mean, a good example of what has to be done is in the Wall Street Journal today, there was basically a very important strategically placed article on the Biden administration, and the wording underneath it was, President Biden is in Hiroshima, Japan, attending this week's summit of the Group of Seven. I gotta tell you, does anybody care?
You know, he's an embarrassment wherever he goes, and he says things that are, he loses his concentration.
Yeah.
They can tell he's not all there. It's just, it's embarrassing as long as this goes on. But I'm going to support him because he's our president, and I wish him the best. But he can't handle the job, and we should not be electing people like this to this job.
Yeah.
It's a critical job that has to be done properly.
I agree.
And he is not the one. I will say one other thing. Another alternative we have as conservatives is DeSantis, who's a very competent and capable person, and I like him. But he's 44, 45 years, I don't know, how he's somewhere around that age. He's got so much political life left in front of him.
Yeah.
And that's fine. At some point, DeSantis will probably be president. If you look at his resume, it looks like he's on that track. But it's not necessary that he be president at this moment. Trump's got one more term. It was taken from him. It was taken from him.
I know.
The media did a fair job, and so did our government, of keeping that Hunter Biden story away from voters. And they attacked him the entire time, this hoax Russia thing and this stupid impeachment.
Yeah.
And, you know, even the Wall Street Journal, I got to tell you, I dropped my subscription to the Wall Street Journal because they turned into an anti-Trump newspaper for the longest time. And they took that January 6th and they blew it out of proportion.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that January 6th, while it was bad and the protesters went too far, you know, that's like calisthenics for Antifa. That's a warm-up act for them.
Yeah.
Those people blow up things and burn things and kill people.
Yeah.
So they weren't close, and yet we treated it like it was Pearl Harbor. So I don't know. The Republicans are chronic losers, and now they don't have the machinery. They don't have most of the media. They don't have government. They don't have most of the corporate world. Most of that group is left.
Yeah.
So it's hard for them, but they are chronic losers. They vote for crummy leftist bills. They support crummy judges a lot of times. It's hard to be a Republican sometimes, but we don't have any choice as conservatives.
I know we don't. No, we really don't. There's probably no question whatsoever about that. But I'm, I don't know. Most of my friends up here, most of my colleagues, don't think that Trump can win again. But I don't know.
So what do? You put up some kind of, you know, milquetoast Republican? Is that what you do? You put up his former Vice President Pence?
No.
Who's going to make the typical sounding responses to things and do nothing? See, the left plays for keeps. You know, they don't mess around. They keep making these incremental changes to our society, and they're destroying the country. They are. They don't like the country, and they're destroying it. People ought to come to grips with that. And so we have to take that attitude. And Trump has that attitude. And if you get another vanilla-type Republican who's going to get nothing done, what does that buy you? Nothing.
No.
So
I don't
I'm in this camp.
Let
me tell you, I know I'm kind of animated about this, but let me tell you this one thing. As a Republican, I would love someone who's very persuasive in making a conservative argument, but we're not going to run a Bill Buckley or a Thomas Sowell or someone like that. It's just not going to happen. Those people won't run when they get impeached and they get sued.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that. So you're going to get a guy like Trump, you know, who's a tough guy. And he takes it, and he says sometimes, you know, really harsh things, and he picks fights. But you need that type of person.
Yeah.
So this is what we're faced with when we have a government that's been treated like, you know, it's military hardware for the left.
Well, it just about is. Danny, we got to take a real quick break here. Just a real quick commercial break. We're going to be right back in about 5 seconds. Stick around for more opinion on politics.
Human being, and I believe that a baby in the womb is a human being. I'm against that. You know, if a woman or a man, and I want to say not just a woman, but if a woman and a man are going to take the responsibility of the potential birth of a child, they need to take the responsibility of making sure that that child has a fair shot at getting ahead in this world. Jimmy, say whatever you want.
Yeah, so I think the responsibility starts. You know, everyone talks about choice, women's choice, the right to their body. Well, you know, I agree. They've got the choice of whether or not they have a relationship with a man that might produce a child. If they do have that relationship and it produces a child, because pretty much we all know how that works, then you have to take the responsibility for it. It's not a choice. It no longer is, you know, your body alone, that you do not share the same DNA as that child. There are three partners in this: the father, the mother, and now the child.
Right.
And who gets to make that decision? should it be the right of the man to say, no, you can't have that child, you're going to abort it? Because he's just as responsible as the woman is. Yes, the woman is carrying it, but that is part of our human nature.
Yep.
You can't ignore that, and you can't ignore the fact that the life, that when life begins, science has shown so clearly now, when those cells begin to separate, when they actually, you get a heartbeat, you've got a human life there. And
that's right.
You know, having five children and actually losing one before it was before they were born, and being the son of a 16-year-old, I got some pretty strong feelings that, hey, I'm so glad it wasn't an option for my mom to just make the choice to get rid of me. And of course, my five children, my theoretical physicist son, my quarterback, football star, my artist daughter and son, and soldier that fought twice in Afghanistan, they wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be here.
So no, you got a great family to use.
This is a pretty serious issue.
Example, Jim, you've got a perfect family to use as an example. You are truly the all-American family, McKinney. There's no question about that.
I'm very blessed and very lucky, and I do have that faith. And I think this entire argument is, again, a political attempt to motivate people out of anger and frustration with really a false narrative.
Yep.
And unfortunately, it's spreading, and the violence, the hate. I mean, how do you make that argument that I'm going to kill you if you don't let me kill children, if you don't let someone else kill children, whether, you know, what, tell me what the difference is between the day before the child is delivered and the day after the child is delivered. You know, tell me that there's a big difference. That it makes no sense to me.
Nope.
And I think as we get more understanding, hopefully more people realize that this is not just a simple decision of one person, one woman's right to choose.
Right.
It's very, very, very complex, and there are many players involved in this.
Yeah, there are. Jimmy, I want to go into a different topic. I think everybody knows where we stand on that particular issue. Rob Shiras, who's a computer consultant who is helping us out in the sense that he is providing an awful lot of very, very thought-provoking questions about what's going on politically right now. You know, what's going on, a lot of people don't understand when people like Obama and Pelosi start sending out emails totally blasting the conservative movement. That means the party is very, very desperate. Give us some comments on that, James, would you?
Yeah, it seems, you know, there is a lot of overreach with facts and knowledge and fear. And I think that's, and the problem that we're facing in America is this continual political use of fear. And it's done on both sides. Republicans, you know, fear, you know, they fear control. And I happen to agree with that. I fear too much authoritarian control. They create the image of, you know, people taking away your right to speak. And that's a fact that's happening right now. Of course, on the left, you've got, you know, the authoritarian tendencies of Trump. You know, he's going to be a dictator, or the Republicans are taking away your rights to make decisions for your own body. Again, is it your body or not? And they are capitalizing on it. And that's the unfortunate reality that we live in with both political parties now, is they somehow think that the way you win is by more money. And of course, the justification for that is that's how you get your message out. So they argue that it's more money and to get the message out. But what they really have done is created an entire industry of consultants and media experts and all these people that make, that get involved in the political discussions, and it becomes a business for them. And Republicans and Democrats, they don't care which side they're really arguing for. They lost all sense of moral integrity in many cases. They immediately undermine the legitimacy of just regular people out there, and they're focused on the consultants, they're focused on how to get the money, and unfortunately, it's incredibly disruptive to our future. And I think it's something has got to break with that. We've got to get candidates. And, you know, I think Trump came out of the gate, I'm sorry, I'm going on a little bit long here, but he came out of the gate in the 2015, 2016 primaries, and he won that without a pocket cost. He didn't spend a lot of money. And so, I mean, he spent, Jeb Bush spent almost as much money in the first couple of months as Trump did for the entire campaign. He won
right.
the nomination and the presidency. So money shouldn't make a difference if your message is solid and strong and people resonate with it. And that's what's so important right now, is to get people that will actually, you know, Kathy Barnett in Pennsylvania, she spent almost, you know, way, way less than Dr. Oz and McCormick, the two people she's fighting against for it. But she did fairly well, got a pretty high percentage point. She lost it, it looks like. But, you know, we've got to figure out a way where people, and I think this is the future of politics, where people are actually looking at the issues, the people, the policies that they're going to go for that protect our individual interests. Well, and it's not all about the money.
Yeah, but with the level of animosity that exists right now in political circles, that's going to happen, but it's not going to happen for a while, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think there's going to be a lot of surprises that come out of this 2022 midterm.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens with the 2024 national elections. But the bottom line is, there is so much dissatisfaction in America right now with everybody about where the country's headed. I mean, nearly 80%, I think some of the polling is showing 75 to 80% are like dissatisfied with the direction of the country. That is painted very, that's a very bad picture for Democrats that lead both the House, the Senate, and the White House. You know, it's a damaging, very, very, very damaging statistic that they've got to face. And not only that, they're losing minority voters in droves, Hispanics. They're losing a significant portion of the black vote. They count on that for the urban power. And of course, they're going to have a problem trying to find the middle ground.
Yep.
And still motivate their progressive base that are the activists.
Well, I think they are, because the progressives, you know, as exemplified by the lead progressives, and we don't need to keep repeating their names, you know who they are, but I don't think they are willing to even come close to compromising. Everybody who I know, who I would put into the category of being a progressive, is very, very definitely not willing to compromise. It'll be interesting to see in the upcoming election what the conservatives will be willing to come up with. Will they be willing to compromise effectively, or will they basically, if it happens to be Donald Trump as a candidate, will they be effective in their message? My personal opinion is I think they'll be very effective. Final word, Jimmy, real quick.
Yeah, so I'm really afraid that we're going to have another, you know, tremendous surprise that comes in, because they're tempting to use, the left is tempting to use fear to control people, and I just don't want to see that. And unfortunately, our media supports it. So let's hope and pray that we can fight that.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.